I'm still not ready to sing the line, "The church is bravely burning," yet. I don't know if anyone else had that reaction. The Lord be with you. A few weeks back at our staff meeting, we picked a prayer out of a book called Every Moment Holy, Volume 1. It's a collection of prayers written by Douglas McKelvey, and his prayer for the day was called A Liturgy for Those Flooded by Too Much Information. And you could say that we found some resonance in the title. For many of us, this 2026 life is well and truly flooded with too much. Political operatives even call it flooding the zone when they bombard the media with so much information that regular folks, normal citizens, just can't keep up. And over time, they become confused and frustrated and overwhelmed. Having named so many sources of our overwhelm, McKelvey finally writes, "Give us discernment so that we may know how to pray, when to speak out and when to act, and when to simply shut off our screens and our devices and to sit quietly in your presence." In our practice each week, along with all of the other worshipers all over the world, we FBC folk focus our attention with the shared effort to name every moment holy, while at the same time recognizing that our hearts and our minds are so often well and truly flooded. Lord, hear our many prayers as they were prayed today with Liz's words. But together we get to also embrace and celebrate a miracle. And that's the miracle that you and I are here today. Even though we were often disoriented or overwhelmed or disheartened, we have not shut down. We have not given up. We have not walled ourselves off from the world. We keep showing up. But the question remains, though, what is the way ahead? How together do we navigate these flooded landscapes? For centuries, theologians and church leaders came up with all sorts of suggestions. I can think of two off the top of my head. Ways to form communities in their own contexts. Some have endorsed the practice of finding ways of siding with those who are in power, hoping to bring good to light by means of influence or money or sometimes even force. Another option, of course, is retreat. Live in a church on defense. Hide behind walls. Make a concentrated effort to keep the harms and ills of the world out of wherever you are. But as I read the Gospels, Jesus doesn't call disciples to either of these strategies. Because the church has always been and always will be a sent people. People called into the wild and risky spaces. The church is a sent people. As our congregation gathers on a Sunday morning, and you read through our order of service, the entire service anticipates the final words of sending. One last blessing with words of encouragement for disciples before they go out, back out, to face the sorts of troubles and challenges that will certainly come at you as followers of Jesus. And it's rough. It's even dangerous out there, this life as a sent people. And Jesus is really clear and honest about this. Sometimes a little too honest, if you ask me. Today's reading closes out the final reading from Matthew chapter 10. Matthew 10 is a chapter which Jesus is sending out 12 disciples, sending them to the lost house of Israel. And as you go, proclaim the good news. The kingdom of heaven has come near. And today we land with a selective reading for today, and we've skipped past 39 verses from Matthew 10. And from a preacher's point of view, you could say that this is something of a relief, honestly. Maybe a relief for all of us. Because Matthew 10 offers some of Jesus' most unsettling and troubling sayings. There's difficult words in there, naming the risks that the disciples would face out there in the world as sent people. One of my favorite beautiful and terrible lines, "See, I am sending you out like sheep into the midst of wolves. So be as wise as serpents and innocent as doves." The chapter slams together comments about those who deny him, betrayal, public floggings. Jesus warns them of religious and cultural resistance and whole families divided. Jesus speaks of those who kill the body. He frames all of this work as taking up a cross to follow him. Any one of these short assertions presents us with material for a difficult sermon all its own. But together, the big takeaway feels like a clear and dark realism for disciples who have their work cut out for them. Jesus doesn't mix words. It's a rough world out there. Biblical scholars propose that a community formed around what would come to be known as the gospel, according to Matthew. These were a metropolitan folk, likely, from a bustling city. People think it could have been Antioch in Syria, sometime around the year 80 or 90. And in this uniquely diverse and unsettling time and place, with the radical message of Jesus still fresh on people's ears, there would have been cultural and religious tensions running high. It was a dangerous time to be a part of such a movement. All of this, naturally, happening in the shadow of Rome's blind cruelty and itchy trigger finger. As the community which forms our practice of worship here on 109th Street in Edmonton in 2026, we have our own unsettling realities and challenges. Each week, we send you out to bear awful witness and to participate in a global system of greed and resource extraction, a machine which feeds on human division, exploitation, and suffering. It's actively destroying the planet. As we send you out, I'm well aware, the zone is flooded from horizon to horizon, and of course, we are overwhelmed. We wonder in our hearts if any of our little efforts, our too small efforts, can make a difference at all. Honestly, Jesus, this is too much for any of us, all this hard reality. We need some words of blessing and sending. Encourage us on our way out. We need reassurance. Our whole life of faith anticipates your good words for us. So yes, Jesus, send us out. Be honest with us, but bless us. Speak words of assurance and hope to these troubled hearts of ours. Matthew chapter 10 does end with final sending words. "Whoever welcomes you welcomes me. And whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me." And I love this part. And whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. What a fascinating and much needed bit of assurance to close out such a difficult passage. And Jesus, if we're understanding you, I mean, if we get this right, these are real and practical implications for the sent church. For a start, we should expect to find allies on the way. Jesus anticipates it. We need to have our eyes out for others out in the wild, people who carry the same hopes and dreams that we do, people who, like us, are giving their energies to resist the dehumanizing forces which divide and harm us, people who are working towards the care and healing of this world and its creatures. And they're often people we didn't see coming, but they saw us along the way. And as Jesus says, it often starts with simple acts of welcome and hospitality. So I ask, who might the Spirit draw us into companionship with? It's an exciting possibility. And may we have the wisdom and the courage and the discernment to find creative and resourceful ways to work alongside these unexpected allies, co-conspirators and collaborators and companions and friends. People who welcome us to partner with them. As a historical trend, church folk are not always great at this. You probably don't need me to tell you that. Churches, broadly speaking, are often prone to sectarian division or schisms or denominational rifts, theological turf wars and gatekeeping. But if we can get past ourselves, the possibilities are rich, friends, and the outcomes beautiful. And then there's that last part, the bit about even a cold cup of water given to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple. Well, that's a glimpse of how Jesus sees the entire enterprise. These sent ones are agents of blessing and change. This work is sacred, even in receiving generosity. We take part in miracles. The smallest effort or gesture of hospitality or kindness or mercy by someone we have maybe we saw as a side character is recognized and celebrated by our Creator. We sent ones are dear to God's heart, and no detail goes unnoticed. Friends, we are the sent church, and we carry such promises with us. The Lord is with us. Cuban-American theologian Kat Armas' most recent book is called Liturgies for Resisting Empire, Seeking Community, Belonging, and Peace in a Dehumanizing World. I was delighted to find out a few weeks ago that Alan was also reading this book. It feels like such a timely and thoughtful work. Armas's book opens with the traditional indigenous Quechua story called Curikindi. It's a folktale about a hummingbird. The hummingbird brings drops of water to pour onto a great forest fire. And all the other animals look on in bewilderment as the little bird returns again and again. And finally, the animals ask the hummingbird, "What are you doing? Why are you dropping one little drop into that fire?" And the hummingbird says, doing what I can. Sometimes our efforts will appear to be too little. Maybe they'll feel absolutely invisible, ineffectual. But we will do what we can. In the face of discouragement, when the gears of the machine seem unstoppable, when we are overwhelmed, when we feel alone, we will discover allies and companions on the way. We will share resources. We will join in the work for the care of this world. We will resist the dehumanizing forces because we are the sent church. This is what we do. And we carry with us Christ into this troubled world. Amen. The Lord is with you.